Okay, so again, this class we're going to be going through, it's called Halachic Reasoning, which is the English word for lomdus, which is the process that we do in Gemara of trying to understand the mechanisms of a lot of the Halachic principles which we take for granted, understand exactly how they work. So we're going to be going through this subject now for a few weeks, and then in a few weeks' time we'll carry on into another subject. So this subject we're going through now is is the opening Gemara in the Perek, in the chapter of Shnaim of Eilu Metzias, which is in the Masechta of Bava Metzia. Bava Metzia, it's in the Seder of Nezikin, which is the laws of damages. And the laws of damages includes basically anything relating to property, anything relating to monetary matters. So this particular book of Bava Metzia deals a lot with property ownership. I don't mean property as in terms of real estate. You guys call real estate in England property is real estate. Property in terms of ownership of items. So this chapter itself of Eilu Metzias is speaking about the ownership of property, ownership of items, beyond them being in your possession. Meaning, what happens when a person loses an item, right? What happens when you lose your item, you're walking along the street, and you had a pen in your pocket, and all of a sudden that pen, you get home and you realize it's not there anymore, right? So whose is that pen, right? Where is that pen? That pen is obviously somewhere in the street. Who does that pen belong to? So the Torah treats the idea of ownership very, very, very seriously. Right? How can you see that it treats it very seriously? There's a mitzvah that you're not allowed to steal, right? Lo signo, if you're not allowed to steal. So if you steal from someone, right, it doesn't just mean that there's an airy fairy. Okay, this is mine. This is yours. There's a reality to ownership, right? A reality to ownership. This thing is owned by me in the physical sense, right? You can be taken to court, you can be taken to prison, obviously for stealing something probably a bit larger than a pen, right? But there's in the sort of worldly sense, but also in the spiritual sense, there's a spiritual reality to ownership. If you steal from someone, there's a spiritual reality. Something is that pen is now out of its place, and there's accountability, right? A person would incur spiritual punishment and oinash for stealing. So this is a reality that we're speaking about over here. So we have to bear that in mind when we're understanding these concepts of to understand why is it as it is. So let's read the first words of the Mishnah. And we'll already infer a lot of principles out of it. Yeah, Phil.
Why not imply returning lost objects instead of stealing?
Sorry?
The mitzvah of not stealing.
Yeah. Meaning if you would take this object and not return it when you would be obligated to return it, then that's stealing. I was just giving that as an example to show that the ownership is a reality. Yeah. So as an extension of that, it would follow that if you found an item that's in the street, right, then you would have an obligation, a Torah obligation, to return it because that's out of its place. There's a lot of deep commentary on this as well. The Maharal speaks about this in terms of galus and exile. Right, everything has its place. Every nation has its place as well. Right, so if a nation is out in exile, that's a lack of completeness in the world. There's something lacking in the world. It's a very, very deep concept, this idea of ownership and place and makom. Anyway, so but that's not halakhic reasoning. That's philosophical reasoning, which maybe we'll do on Monday mornings. Okay, so the Mishnah opens. Baruch Hashem, just enough. The Mishnah opens. Eilu Metzias Shaloi ve'elu Chayev Lahachris. These are the Metzias. The Metzias. A Metzia is a found item, right? You've heard of the concept of a bargain. Like, I found a Metzia. It's a bargain. It means that you found something, right? So these are the found items, which are Shaloi, which are yours. You're allowed to keep it. You find something, you're allowed to keep it. Ve'elu chayev lahachriz. And these are the ones which you are obligated to announce. So already over here, we can see that there's this concept that there's an obligation to announce it, or you're allowed to keep it, right? The question which we'll ask, following from our introduction about ownership, is how would you ever have a situation where you're allowed to take something, take an object, which you found? It belongs to him. But there's a reality of ownership. How are you allowed to take it away? How are you allowed to keep it? Yeah.
If you find a penny in the street, it's not identifiable. How would it,
but it's mine. It fell out of my pocket.
So we're not saying that there's an issue of yeush or anything here. Right, that, you know, it's something.
What do you mean by an issue of yours?
Something that we could see that, you know, it's the person lost it, and there's no way that they're going to be able to track down that it's theirs. And you can assume that, you know, it's money without any kind of simon or anything like that. We're not talking about that. We're talking about you saw it fall out of somebody else's pocket.
You didn't necessarily see it fall out. I want to know, what's the halachic mechanical, right? We're in halachic reasoning over here. We want to know the mechanism as to why you're allowed to keep something when there's a reality of ownership. It belonged to him. It was in his pocket a moment ago. It may be out of his pocket, but it's still, there's a spiritual connection. There's a connection between that item and him. So how are you allowed to come ahead and pick it up and keep it for yourself? Right, there are some things, the Mishnah says, there are some things you're allowed to keep. Some things you're obligated to announce. Some things you're allowed to keep. Yeah,
I would think if it's something that's not worth it, like something, as they say, less than a pruta value, is maybe, I don't know, I'm just guessing. But it could be maybe something that would be something undefiable, like you're going down Mea Shireem, and you find a black yarmulke, and you put up, you know, lost black yarmulke. It could be anybody's, it's nobody's name's written in it, and anybody could come up and claim it, and you would never know, even if they said, oh, well, you know, like, you know, I found it out in this area. Everyone knows, like, you know, it's only one area. So, it could be, you know, I lost it here, but the wind could have blown it down there.
Okay, really, I'd say that's a technical problem with being able to identify and return it to the person. Right. That means you're allowed to take it. We should say there's a concept of yehei munach, right? That the thing has to stay. You've got to keep it until Eliyahu Novi comes along. Right? You're allowed to keep it for yourself. Why should you have to keep it? Why should you be able? Why should you be allowed to?
Well, you mentioned spiritual connection. If a person gives up on recovering it, does that break the connection?
Ah, okay, yeah. Excellent. Very nice. So Richard was already hinted to concept. I wanted to hear it a little bit clearer out. Right, there is as Martin very rightly pointed out, there is a concept called yush. Richard already mentioned it. Yush. Yush is a concept of what it means, how it roughly translates, is giving up hope.
Abandonment.
Yeah, giving up hope. I think you mentioned in the class yesterday, right? Lost all hope. Yeah. So if you lose all hope, giving up hope, having yush, abandonment. I think they translate it over here as abandonment. Abandonment. If you abandon hope of being able to get back the item, or abandon hope. Let's leave out the words of being able to. Abandoning your connection, your ownership of the item. Then that renders the item as hefka. Hefka means ownless, right? And if something is ownless, then I can come ahead, I can come along and pick it up and take it for myself, right? So the only way of transferring ownership is by actually transferring ownership. If I would right, that's how we do a transaction in a shop, in a store, right? You go and buy something, I give money, and the person gives that thing to me, and he transacts that transaction. He makes that thing, it was owned by him, and now he transfers the ownership to me, right? This is a little bit different. It's not working in I'm transferring it to someone. It's saying I'm transferring it to no one. I'm making it hefka, I'm making it ownerless. And that's what we do with our chametz on Erev Pesach. We do the bittel of the chametz. We say it's ka'afra le'ara. It's like the dust of the earth, right? It's not. It's ownerless. It doesn't belong. It's not owned by me. And that we see by Pesach is a perfect example of the fact that completely cuts all ties of ownership to that item. Otherwise, you'd be you'd be transgressing the prohibition of owning chametz on Pesach. Right? So when you say the item is hefka, you're saying I have absolutely no connection to it whatsoever. It is not owned by me anymore. Right? And therefore, if we're talking about a lost item, a person walking along and sees his item on the street can come ahead and take it for himself. No problem with that at all, because it's ownless.
You see, yeah. Someone might not say that. Someone might not think, oh, I'm never going to get it back as Hefka. They're going to say, I don't think I'm ever going to get it back. But they're not going to take that extra step and say, it's ownerless. It's no longer connected to me.
And so, when do you know that point where someone said...
Yeah, is there a condition?
Okay, go.
We assume the other person made?
Yeah, so there's the... I think Martin is asking, there's two questions over here. One is, what if he didn't know about the item? What if he didn't know that it was lost? Mm. Right? So that's a discussion later on the base about yush shaloi midas, about abandonment where you didn't actually know that the thing was lost. Just, if you would have known, you for sure would have abandoned. You for sure would have had yush. Right? We're talking about a penny, right? You didn't necessarily know it was lost out of your pocket. Right? Do we say as you? So this is that's a discussion between Rava and Abaya, a machlekas between Rava and Abaya. Actually, although we paskin, we rule like Rava in every case of halacha when there's a machlekas in Rava and Abaya. That is one of the cases where we paskin where we rule like Abaya, and Abaya says yush loy midas loy have yush is not actually yush. It doesn't work. You have to actually know at the time that it was. At the time you picked up, you have to know for sure that that guy knew that it was lost and had yush. So it would play out over here. Martin's question is a little bit different because you're saying that how do you know, just because he had abandonment, how do you know that he made it ownerless? So he's saying that it is one and the same.
He didn't do that. He wasn't a scholar. He didn't know halacha.
Yeah, yeah. So yush already is enough to say that it's gone. If you look at the first Rashi, Eilu Metzias Nisyayishu Habaylim Mehem. The Bailim, the owners, had yush, they gave up, they abandoned from them, Kada'oma b'gemara v'hefkahen. And as a result of the fact that they had yush, that renders it hefka. There's not a two-step process, it is one thing. You have yush, oh, the result of that is that it becomes hefka. Mm-hmm. I think that answers your question. Yeah, Daniel?
No.
Okay. Fine. So this is our little introduction. We see that there is a... Yeah. Hi. Harold.
Question. If we pass in like a bay that you have to know that the owners are aware of the loss, so how can you ever pick up something that you see on the street? How could you know that the person at that moment that you see it was already aware of the loss?
Good. It's a great question. The Gemara goes through a few cases where even a buyer would agree that there is yush shalei midas, in a case where there's no question, right? The question is the problem is that at the point that you're picking up the item, the guy hasn't had yush, right? Even though later on he would, but right now when it comes into my ownership, the guy hasn't had yush yet. So there is really no way around it, no way out of it, in order to take ownership of the item. The Gemara speaks about certain cases where the Torah actually said the guy's having yush, right? It's not just an assumption that we're making, that Beis Din is making, or whoever is making. It's a gezeirat hakosav, as we call it, a Torah ordained principle that this in certain situations. People have yush. If you're not having yush, the Torah has yush for you, right? And therefore,
if they need to be aware of the loss, how do you know that they even know that the item is missing?
Right. So I'm saying that exactly. That's the problem, right? So the only way out of it, the only way around it, is in some situations the Torah actually says the guy's had yush, even though he didn't have yush. The Torah calls it yush. Shariyei Rachmana. Right, is the wording of the Gemara. The Torah itself allowed it to be taken. Right, because
Beit Din Hefker. Beit Din Hefker.
It's not Beit Din. It's the Torah. It's the Torah saying this is out of your. Right, there's another couple of other cases where something is where the Torah actually changed ownership. One of the examples is if a person digs a pit and someone falls in, right? Then and Chametz is another example. Someone digs a pit and someone falls in, right? Then you're obligated to pay for the pit, right? If it's in my own property, then obviously, what are you doing trespassing in my property? The only way you're going to be able to be obligated for someone falling in is if it's actually in a public domain, and it was a negligence that you dug a pit in the public domain. So you dug a pit in the public domain, someone falls in and gets damages. How can they get damage from a pit that you dug? What actually caused, I have to cause damage, right? Remember, there's going to be reality. What did I do to cause you damage? So the answer is that the pit belongs to me. That's my possession. It's a part of me. Just like if my ox went ahead and knocked someone over, that's my ox. So I'm obligated to pay whatever damage the ox causes. So the pit also is called mine. I created the pit, and therefore the pit is in my ownership. I own that pit. The question is, if it's in Rishus HaRabim, if it's in a public domain, that pit's not mine. You can't own something in the public domain, right? I changed a chazaka, but that only works with private property, right? By changing, by building or digging in private property, you can change ownership through it's called a chazaka, right? An active change, right? But in public domain, how can that be my pit? So this is one of the examples of the things where the Torah says, even though it's not yours, we're going to put it in your possession in order for you to be obligated for it. That's one thing. The other example is chametz and Pesach. You don't own chametz and Pesach, right? But Pesach, there's no ownership of chametz. So if it's actually in my domain, yeah, how am I going to be obligated for it? So that's another example where the Torah says, we're going to say it's like it's in your domain in order for you to be obligated. So we see the Torah changes this ownership. Anyway, a slight digression. But let's get back. So the Mishnah says that there are some categories of items which you are allowed to keep and some which you are obligated to announce. The ones we're obligated to announce, that we understand. There's this reality of possession, of ownership. And the ones which you're allowed to keep, we explain because there's a concept of yish, a concept of rendering something ownless, of abandonment, and therefore you're allowed to keep it. So now the Mishnah is going to go ahead, and the Mishnah and the next Mishnah is going to go through the different categories of items, some which you're allowed to keep, and some which you are not allowed to keep. The ones you're allowed to keep because the person had yish, and the ones you're not allowed to keep because he didn't have yish. So what would be the variable? What do you think is going to be the variable which is going to make a difference between whether it's whether you're allowed to keep it or whether you're not allowed to keep it?
Recognizability.
Okay. Identifiability. That's too many syllables in a word. It's definitely it's not
an English word.
As we call it in Hebrew, a simon. Right? If an item has a simon, an item has a recognizable symbol on it, yeah, a name tag, then what?
Then we can't assume that
there's. Why?
You have to hold it and return it to Benjamin Franklin. There's pictures on it.
Yeah.
Why not? Why can't you hold on to it? If the pen has a name or telephone number inside of it,
then you know to whom it belongs. They did this with.
Does it matter about what I, the person that's picking it up? Does it make any difference what I think about it?
I think not. But if someone took the time to place a symbol on it.
It shows that they were preparing for this possibility that it could be misplaced, and
okay.
they did something so that it could get back to the owner.
Okay, therefore.
There's no yish.
Therefore, they're going to have a yish. Okay, excellent. It all comes back to yish. Is there going to be yish over here?
Yeah.
Right? The guy, since he's got a simon on it, there's a symbol there, it's completely traceable, right? He's going to say, well, look, anyone who finds my pen in the street is not going to have is going to see that there's a simon. They're going to try and return it back. They'll put up a petek, put up a sign or something, and they'll return it back to me. I'm going to be abandoning hope in this. I'm going to be getting my pen back, right? So the person's not going to have yish. That's one example. One example is a simon. Anyone think of any other examples? Any other variables?
Where it's lost.
Public, where it's public, lost, okay. Private. Why would that make a difference?
Public place, private place.
Okay.
Private place, I could maybe say it's mine. It's on my property.
Oh, in your own property?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And what's the other person doing?
Okay, good. But maybe even in another property, even at Richard's house. Right, if I lose my pen at Richard's house.
Well, you could be, let's say, in a small village of only 30 people, and someone finds it, and everyone knows each other. They don't have any visitors, so you figure, okay, someone in the village will eventually bring it back to me.
Okay, mm-hmm. Good. Whereas, if you found it, you know, in the middle of
Times Square.
Of Times Square.
Well, we're saying in this case there is.
I normally learn with this with students downtown, so Milk Street. You know, you found it at Milk Street, you know.
How neatly it's arranged.
Yeah. That's another.
Okay.
That's simon, though, right? When we say like a stack of money with, you know, that's bound together or something, we say that that's a simon, isn't it? Even if it's not, there's no identification marks per se.
Yep. If it looks clearly like someone has placed it there, has put it there, then yep, good. Okay. Something. Anything else?
I mean, I just did think that it's ironic that I've known many instances where large, huge sums of money have been found with no simon on it, which is kind of stupid, I guess.
Well, actually, it's the opposite of what we've been saying, because if you find a penny, okay, the guy who lost it isn't going to say, oh, I give it up, it's hefty. He's going to say, I'll come back this way 3 days from now, that penny will still be there. But if he lost a $100 bill, he's going to give up. He says, no way it's going to be there 3 days from now. So the high price
an ironic twist there from Professor.
Yeah. Even though it has Benjamin Franklin.
Okay. Any other ideas? Daniel already mentioned something in passing, but didn't pick it up. What if it's something very, very expensive? Yeah, something very expensive. What's the person going to say?
They're going to go to a lot of trouble to try to recover it.
Right. This is a very expensive. A person lost their phone. Right, it's obviously going to be very different if you lost your pen or if you lost your phone walking down Milk Street and your phone fell out of your pocket. Find a phone on the floor.
Pen.
Right, okay, it has a simon. Also, might have a sign on there. It has the telephone numbers. Also, it's very expensive. The person's not going to. He's going to put in a lot of effort trying to find that thing. So he's definitely not going to have yush because of the value of it. He's not going to have yush. This is such an expensive, such a big, expensive, you know, suitcase full of money. Right, I'm not going to have yush. Yeah, that's one example. Another example, another one I can think of, which is going to be very important, is the effort that it's going to take to get the item back. Right? If you lost your pen or your phone, in Germany in the airport, when you're traveling, when you're passing through, that's going to take a lot of effort to go all the way back to the right. So. Let's say if it's a pen, right? If you lost your pen in Richard's house, you're going to go back. You're going to go over to Richard's house to go and get it. It's not so much effort. That's all the way the other side of town, actually. Okay.
If it fell on the floor there, it's gone.
Okay. If you left your pen in shul, right? You're not going to have use. I left my pen in shul. I'll just come back this afternoon and pick it up. Whereas if you left your pen in Milk Street Cafe, and the next time you're going there is only in how often do you go to? Oh, you don't do Milk Street. The next time you're going there is next month. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of effort for sure. By next month, it's going to be gone. But to go tomorrow, out of your way, that's going to take a lot of effort.
One way or the other, it's going to be thrown away or whatever.
Right, unless you go back immediately. For that, I'm not going to put in the effort. So there are a few variables and factors which are going to affect whether the person is going to have yush or the person is not, and these are. Obviously quite objective, right? There has to be a certain objectivity to it because halacha is always objective and always has an objective black and white. Of course, there's gray area as well, but there has to be the black and white, and, you know, to know exactly what is yours and what is not yours. And that's for the Beis Din to decide, you know, where does this gray area fall into? Is it the black and white? But we have to have a clear, identifiable black and white line of and so this ownership, this Mishnah is going to go through some examples of items where the person would clearly have Yush. Okay? So let's read on in the Mishnah. Another line. Elu Metzias Shalai. So we introduced the heading was, there are some which are yours, there are some which you're obligated to announce. Elu Metzias Shalai. And these are the ones which are yours, which you're allowed to keep. The first one, this is the one we're going to be focusing on now, is Matzah Peiros Mefuzarin. If you found Peiros, fruits, which actually is referring to grains, regular sized wheat grains. But we'll speak about fruits. We'll give it just as an analogy. But matzah fruit peiros mefuzarin. You found fruits which were scattered. Those you are allowed to keep. These are shaloi. They're yours. Some other examples: mois mefuzarois, coins that are scattered. Krichos birshas arabim. Bundles of stalks in the public domain, vegule de vela, and rings of figs, kikaris shel nachtoim, loaves which are identifiable by the baker's stamp or a certain shape of the way the loaves were baked. These are all things which don't have a simon, they don't have a sign on them, they are in the public domain, right? They are difficult are going to take a lot of effort to pick up. So these are all examples of things which you're allowed to keep, yeah, based on the scattered, on the variables.
And sorry, scattered, not neatly arranged.
Ah, okay, good. Mm-hmm. So now we're gonna skip the rest of the Mishnah and we're gonna jump straight down to the Gemara. The Gemara says matzah peiros mefuzarin. Yeah, you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Matzah peiros mefuzarin. Is everyone with me? The ones that say mm-hmm. They make it so that everyone else, you know. What? Thanks. See, there's a gimel mem at the beginning of the line in large letters. Gemara.
12 lines down is a lot of gimels.
Large letters. Gimel mem. That stands for Gemara. Matzah peiros mefuzarin. This is our subcategory over here. Our subheading. Matzah peiros mefuzarin. If you found fruits which were scattered, right? Again, we need black and white, right? This is what is yours. You're allowed to keep it. What if you found loads and loads and loads and loads and loads? You found a whole truck load of fruits, a truck load of potatoes. It happens to be they're not on the pallets anymore. They've fallen off the pallets and it's scattered, right? You're allowed to keep that. Now, hold on 1 minute. Bobby, can I just bring in your 18-wheeler? I want to pick up some potatoes. Yeah, and take ownership of these potatoes. Are you allowed to keep that?
That's
according to the Mishnah.
Yes.
According to the strict letter of the law, yeah, according to the Mishnah, the basic understanding reading of the Mishnah is matzah peiros mefuzarin. Any case that you find peiros, fruits that are scattered, you're allowed to keep. Does it matter how many fruits? Does it matter how scattered? Does it matter anything? No, doesn't seemingly not. So the Gemara immediately picks up on this and says, whoa, 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 hold your horses. We're not going to allow this to get so out of hand. Ask the Gemara, v'kama. How much? What is the quantity? How are we going to quantify this principle of peiros mefuzarin? Because the Gemara is assuming that obviously we're not talking about a whole truckload of potatoes that just fell out of their boxes and their sacks. Obviously, it's not true. Yeah, obviously. Why is that obviously not true?
Nobody's gonna have Yush.
Great, good, excellent. Thank you very much, Harold. Always doing a great job and bringing it back to Yush for us. Yeah. Yeah, which is again the halakhic mechanism of how this whole concept of lost items works. lost property. Yeah, so the guy's not going to have yush. For sure he's not going to have yush. We want to know what is the quantity, the Gemara asks, v'kama, how much, what is the quantity that we can objectively say that the person is going to have yush, and what is the quantity which we're going to say that he's not going to have yush? Yeah, so that is the question of the Gemara, v'kama, how can we quantify this halacha over here? Omar Rebbe Yitzchak, says Rebbe Yitzchak, what is the quantity? Kav ba'arba amos. The quantity is a kav in arba amos. A kav is a measure, a certain measure of produce, a measure of volume. And arba amos is a space, is a size. Arba amos is arba amos is about 6 feet. Yeah. And a kav, not sure exactly how much that is. But let's say, for our intents and purposes over here, that what we're doing over here, let's call it 10 apples in 6 feet. Yeah, a kav in arba amos is 10 apples in 6 feet. If you found 10 apples in 6 feet, a kav by arba amos, what's the halacha?
Can you give it back?
I think it's a
one second. Who? What?
Gonna come back for.
Is he?
Kav.
Yeah. Kav in arba amos.
Yeah.
What's the halacha?
But now he is.
It's not scattered. Hmm? It's not scattered.
Kav. Who says it's not scattered? What did Rabbi Yitzchak say? Richard, you're not sneaking ahead of that Tosfos, are you?
No.
Good. What's the halacha? What's the halacha? Kav ba'arba amos. That's what Rabbi Yitzchak said. Is peiros mefuzarin. If you found fruits that are scattered, they're yours. You're allowed to keep them. What is the quantity that you're allowed to keep? A kav in arba amos. 10 apples in 6 feet. Okay. What does that mean?
Less than 10. If there's that less much than for 10, less, then you can also keep them. But if it's more than 10, you can't.
Why not?
Because more than 10 would not be considered scattered, but less than 10 would be considered scattered in such a small
area. In such
space.
A small area.
Okay. Well, there's two variables. There's two. How many variables we got over here? What are the variables?
The amount.
It's a fixed area.
A fixed area. We've got the variable of area, and
the amount.
We have the variable of the amount of apples, right? The quantity of the apples, quantity and area. Okay, so if I would change the variable of quantity of apples, then if we'd use a mathematical word, or to as a tagline for that variable of changing, what would be that tagline be? Mm-hmm. The number of apples, the quantity of apples.
The apples per square amma.
Yeah.
In terms of yush, let's bring it back to Harold's yush over here. Okay. Right? Why is a person going to have yush if there's a kav?
Because a kav might be a small amount. Let's say the guy, he lost this going to the shuk. You know, he's taking his agala and he's going, and a small amount, he might say, like, it's not worth my time to go back for something,
right,
a kav or less.
Why? But why?
Because it's it might not be worth his time. Time is money, you know. It's
right. The time.
But if you would make it more apples, then what's that going to change?
He might be like, I can't take that loss.
Why?
Because
it's more money. It's more, like, more of a loss for him.
Value, right? Value. Cost, yeah. Value. Right, there's a value, right? The variable of kav is going to affect the value, right? What's the value? Now, the other variable is the area,
mm-hmm,
right? A larger area or a smaller area of scattered. What would be the tagline for that?
It's going to take him more time to look for it.
If it's more dispersed, it may not be worth his time and money, and for the
why not?
Money loss.
Why not?
Because it's more of an effort to recover over a larger area.
Excellent. Okay, that is the tag. What's the tagline? The tagline is effort. Right? We have value. On the one hand, you've got a kav. That's the value of a kav. If you make that more value, Yeah, then he's going to come back for that. It's a calf that he won't come back for. Less than a calf, for sure, that's just not, it's not worth enough money, right? But more value, if we up the value, then that's going to make a difference, right? Then the other side is, how much effort is there going to be for me to gather it in? If it's a large, you know, a large space, it's a lot of effort. I'm not going to come back for that. But if it's a small area, it's a small amount of effort that I would come back for.
But there'd also be a consideration that if, you know, depending on how it's scattered, you know, one could be the case of there's a tiny hole in the sack that as he's carrying it along, he doesn't even notice it as it's going, versus it burst open. And that way, you know, okay, I can't do it now, I'm going to dump this off and I'll come back and get it.
Didn't understand the question.
Okay.
Sorry.
So... You know, they're like, let's say he's got these sacks of produce that he's taking to the market, and there's a tiny hole in the bag, and so as he's carrying it along,
so that's more scattered. So it's more effort. Right. Yeah. So that will be changing the variable of, it wouldn't be daladamas, it would be
whatever. Yeah, you know, it's probably going to be a lot more.
Right.
Yeah.
Talad ma'odis.
Right. Yeah. So that's going to change the variable of effort. Mm-hmm. So we have over here a case where we've got two variables, a kav in arba amos, right? If we've got a kav in arba amos, we've got two variables. When we've got two variables, right? You can change either one of them, right? It specifically, says Rabbi Yitzchak, it's specifically a kav in arba amos, right? This over here, what it says to me is a golden proportion. Yeah, this is the golden proportion that a person would not come back for. If you change any one of the variables, that's going to change the proportion. That's going to change our golden ratio, and that's going to make a big difference. Right. So if you change either one of the variables, that's going to throw the proportion out, and it's going to affect whether the person is going to have yish or not.
Yeah. I was going to say, it might not rightly be so what he's saying, though, because it all depends on market value and market price of whatever these. Listen, you can go to the market and you can buy these, like, you know, like regular little purple plums in season, and they're not so much money. And then they have these special plums that they ship in from Japan that are called dinosaur eggs that are like $2 a plum. I'm serious.
I would assume that we're talking about just a regular produce over here, not expensive produce. Expensive produce is actually in the next Mishnah. They speak about different about things which can only be purchased at certain fruit shops and whatever.
But it can also be time of famine, which also, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So we're status quo. Mm. You know, talking about all things being equal. How do they call that in Latin? All things being equal. Yeah, okay, sorry. I also don't speak Latin.
This is an example from apples. If you found one apple...
I'm glad you're speaking up.
One apple is fine. It's yours.
Yeah.
If you 25 apples, it's valuable. What does it mean? I can take one apple and go away?
No. You can't take any of the apples.
No, but this is what my question. If I found one...
If you only found one apple...
Yeah, if I found 25, can I take one?
Can you take one? No way. No. It has a name. The whole collection is given the name of this. The guy didn't have use on any of it.
You cannot take even one.
Because the guy's coming back for all of it.
Okay, but each one is invaluable, but everything valuable.
Combined. We look at the value combined. We look at the kav ba'arba amis, the whole collection of fruits. Okay, we'll call a day for here today, and then next week we're going to see the Gemara is going to ask a penetrating question about this button up. A penetrating question, trying to understand what location this kav in arba amos was actually situated, because of course it's going to make a difference in how the objects were scattered. Were they scattered in some sort of formation, or were they just scattered there? Obviously, that's going to play a big part, right? As in basically, the Gemara is going to ask, are we just looking at these two variables, this golden ratio, in a vacuum, right? As you were saying, there's going to be value, there's going to be cost. Do we look at it in a vacuum, right? According to Rabbi Yitzchak, now, the basic understanding is that it's just a vacuum, cover an arabamis, you can come along and take it. No other prerequisite, no other requirements. Why not look at how they were placed? So we're going to see that penetrating question, and we're going to see a new take and a new understanding of the Gemara. And then after that, we're going to see an even more penetrating question about our hanacha, our preconceived notions of this golden ratio. Okay,
last question. If we found something, there is really complicated question. You need to take care of, to return everything. What is the obligation if I ignore it? I see something and...
If you are obligated to return something and you ignore it, you transgress a Torah prohibition.
It means if I find something, I cannot ignore it.
You cannot ignore it. There is a mitzvah in the Torah, hoshev toshiv, you have an obligation to return a lost item, the altis alim, and you're not allowed to hide yourself from that item. The only situations where a person is allowed to hide away from it is if zokein ve'enoi lefi kvodei, if he's a wise person or an old person, and it's not honorable, you know, it's not very looks a bit weird if he's, you know, this rabbi is pulling his trousers up to go over the swamp to take someone's ox and then pull the ox over his shoulder to the market to try and find the owner of the ox, then in such a case he would be exempt from the mitzvah of returning the lost item. The Torah learns why that is from another pasuk. But in any other case, if you find something, you're not allowed to shy away from it. You have an obligation to return it.
Question for you. How you feel if you found parcel with a lot of money, with no any indication? How you feel to keep it? For example, for me, I just go away. I don't need to, it's not my money, I don't know how to return. This is several times,
so you have
I found
to,
cell
so
phone,
you...
I did not pick up it.
You have to make an effort to return it.
What is but this is nonsense. There is no way that what is nonsense.
Turning into the police.
Yeah.
That's enough of an effort.
Call the police.
Call the police or return it. If you found it in a restaurant, then give it to the owner of the restaurant. In Jerusalem. Yeah.
There are
in Israel, obviously, people take all of these halachas very seriously. You know, you find a bunch of keys. So you'll see all over the place, on every park bench, it says, Hashavat Aveda, you know, someone lost an earring. You know, please call this number with a simon, with a sign. Someone lost I saw once in yeshiva, I have a picture of it, a handkerchief hanging from the cloakroom with a sign over it, Hashavat Aveda, you know, who lost this hanky.
But I mean, there are, like you were saying about if a rabbi, also they say, I think they give the example, like a Kohen can't go into a graveyard if he sees something lost, something like that. But I think maybe what he's talking about is like something that you see a gun, you know, like lying in the street. Obviously, you don't want to pick it up. You don't want your fingerprints.
You don't want to get involved.
I had a friend. He was he used to clean the bank. He was an Arab guy. He found somebody's wallet. He called the person. No, I found your wallet. The person called the police because, you know, and he brought the police and they arrested the Arab thinking like that he stole his wallet and he was only like trying to give it back to him. So there's like, and that guy says, I'm never going to return anything ever again because it was too much trouble for him. So there's like certain things where you want to avoid those situations. I guess you could call the police and saying like, listen, I just found this gun in the middle of the street and they'll come and get it, but they might still suspect you of something or not where you might want to say, I'd rather, you know, leave it alone.
If you don't want the mitzvah, don't get the mitzvah.
No, but I'm saying there are situations where
it's a mitzvah and and not doing it is an aveira.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Are there situations though where you would make more sense to assume that the person is going to come back for it and backtrack? I mean, like this, like the potatoes
probably,
on the highway.
Probably.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the amount of time it's going to take you to collect an 18-wheel truck worth of potatoes and bring it somewhere else. Guy's probably at some, you know, going to realize that he lost his whole truck full of potatoes and come driving back down the highway. It'd be easier for him to find it himself than, and then first have to make a connection between some stranger who might have picked it all up. So
right.
Is that, I mean, is that an allowable assumption?
I think so. I've had a case once where I lost a bunch of keys in a park in Israel. Left it on the bench. I know exactly where it was. Came back, and it was gone. No, it wasn't that someone stole it. It was probably that someone took it and put up a sign, but the sign blew off, and then it's gone. And then, you know, just leave it there. Let me come back and get it. You know, it happened also with a computer once as well. But that I did get back. The guy drove it round to my house. How did he find out who it belonged to? They had a little paper in there. He called. He made a dozen phone calls to find the owner of the computer. It happened to be I was there 5 minutes. You know, later, if he'd have sort of waited there for a couple of minutes, but that's his mitzvah, that's his obligation, and he got a tremendous mitzvah for that.
I actually heard a true story less than a year ago. I think maybe I told Martin this, that there was a Bel's Chassid who was waiting for a bus to get back to Jerusalem. He was in Haifa, and he found a huge